It is Monday, January 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. In the next half hour, our White House correspondent tells us what President Obama thinks of the Democrat and Republican candidates hoping to succeed him in the top job. We'll go to our New York studio for a look at what to expect in the new trading week on Wall Street with markets reporter Jill Malandrino. And we'll hear some tips from Steve Norman about the best new pop music for 2016. It's all ahead on International Edition. President Obama has shared his thoughts about the Democrats and Republicans vying to succeed him in this year's election with U.S. news site Politico. Earlier, I spoke to our White House correspondent Mariela Salinas, and I asked her to share the highlights of that interview.
What was really interesting about it is how much he wanted to assess the political candidates ahead of the Iowa caucus, which is a week from today. So he really wanted to talk about the top Democratic candidates, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. And he really tried to appear neutral, but it seemed pretty clear. He had a lot of praise for Hillary Clinton, the former Secretary of State under him, and his toughest opponent back in 2008 when they were running together. On the campaign trail, she really has been praising Obama a lot.
What did he have to say about Bernie Sanders?
About Bernie Sanders, he sees him as a very principled man. He's very adamant about reforming Wall Street. But he's also criticized Obama for not doing enough to prosecute top executives. And the other thing that the president said is that you have to be able to juggle a lot of things as president. And I think Bernie Sanders on the campaign trail has just been very, the topic has often been Wall Street reform. And so he sees, it appears from this interview, Hillary Clinton as a candidate who can handle all the many things that happen all at once when you're president of the United States. So it's very interesting. And he also sort of went back to 2008, was reminiscing about his time when the Iowa caucus were taking place. And so how that was an important time when it really cemented his theme for his whole campaign and presidency of hope and change.
And what did the president say in terms of the leading Republican candidates for president?
That is one thing he definitely wanted to protect against. He just sees his position is they have no vision. They have no policy. It's just full of rancor, division. He has very strong words for this whole tone of the Republican campaign process right now. And so there's also the heavy threat that these candidates have of undoing a lot of what the president has done. And so this is not only seeing another Democrat get elected, I think it's cementing his legacy. Who's going to carry on what he has started and who will unravel it? So you saw a lot of this in the interview where he was very relaxed. He seemed very pensive, looking out as the snow was falling during this historic blizzard, and just really speaking openly about a lot of these different things.
Well, thank you very much to our White House correspondent, Mariela Salinas, for filling us in on the interview.
My pleasure.
Well, it's time for a look at social media and International Edition's Doug Bernard joins us in the studio. We just heard Mary Ellis talk about the snow, and I imagine there's still a lot of social media buzz about this massive blizzard that hit the East Coast.
Well, you know, Michael, there are a lot of traditions, I think, that are growing up around these mega snowstorms, as you know well. One of them is the naming of the storm. We've seen Snowmageddon, Snow My God, I think, previously, Snowpocalypse. It looks like the winner this time is Snowzilla.
Snowzilla. Who chose that?
Well, it looks like Washington actually chose it. It just sort of coalesced on social media. They were the first. So if people are curious, and I recommend they do this, just enter hashtag Snowzilla into Twitter, and there's an amazing amount of images, videos, people, all kinds of things that how people were really experiencing this up and down the eastern seaboard. That said, If Twitter is any measure, I think people are getting a little tired of all the white stuff, and they're moving on to other topics.
Such as what?
Well, the second trending topic right now is Rick Perry, of all things. He's the Texas governor who last year was a candidate for the Republican presidential nomination for about 5 minutes. Well, today he endorsed officially Ted Cruz in the Iowa caucus, a fellow Texan. And so that hashtag Rick Perry, all kinds of people sharing thoughts about that, but also a little bit of the irony, he's getting more attention now on Twitter than it seems he ever did.
He was actually a candidate.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, thanks so much to Doug Bernard for filling us in on social media. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition with me, Michael Lippin. U.S. markets ended last week with a rally, and earlier I spoke to our markets reporter Jill Malandrino in New York to ask her what lifted Wall Street at the end of last week.
It was really quite impressive last week. We saw a 2% gain on Friday, which was up 1.4% on the week. Although investors were down 7% for the year, it was quite an impressive rally. As it has been for 2016, it was all predicated on the movement that we saw in crude. Crude finally caught some of a bid, and the S&P clearly reacted off of that.
What can we expect in this new trading week with earnings that are coming out?
I think we can expect to see more volatility. And of course, all eyes will be focused on Apple after the close on Tuesday. That's always the most widely watched stock. Other key names that traders will be focused on are Facebook, Amazon, and Microsoft. But I think what we really need to focus on, as has been for 2016, is of course what's happening in crude and when that correlation of crude and the S&P trading in tandem with each other, once that stops, that's really the million-dollar question. And, of course, we have the FOMC meeting starting on Tuesday with the rate decision on Wednesday at 2 o'clock Eastern. There is not an expectation for an interest rate hike because of continued global weakness in consumer. We're not seeing much in inflation. And that's really why you're starting to hear more dovish commentary out of global central banks. And I think we'll continue to hear that out of our Federal Reserve as well.
Can you explain how the low oil prices that we've seen lately are affecting the stock market in the U.S.?
Well, typically, energy and crude, it's very correlated when you look at the S&P 500 because it does comprise 10 to 12% of the index. That also, along with what we're seeing in currency movements, is obviously going to affect crude just as it does with any other commodity as it's priced in US dollars. So because we're seeing such an impact on currency because of FOMC commentary and other global central banks, that is one of the reasons that crude is being impacted. But at the end of the day, it's basic supply and demand. It's one of the most basic economic principles. We are in a major oil supply glut. We have Iran coming on with another 300,000 barrels a day in a very, very overstretched system. And there's simply no storage, and the demand isn't keeping up with the oversupply. So until you see that dynamic catch up with itself, or until we start to see production come offline, or we see U.S. producers start to consolidate, that's when we're going to see oil continue to be under pressure. So the key is, when will those dynamics take place? And until then, when will we see divergence between crude and S&P trading together? That's really what the key is.
Now, the FOMC, which is the Federal Reserve, is going to consider interest rates. What is keeping it from raising rates further from the very low levels they're at now?
Well, I think what the issue is here is that the global economy is not as strong as they may have expected, and data certainly supports that. And we're seeing that across the globe. We're also not getting the uptick inflation in inflation as expected. And at this point, their comments tend to be more dovish. And based on what we saw with China injecting another $50 billion into its market, we're seeing dovish commentary out of the ECB. The Bank of Japan is also on deck this week for an interest rate decision, and there's no expectation of a rate there. It seems as if global banking leaders just don't have the confidence as they may have had perhaps, you know, 2-3 years ago, a few months ago.
Well, thank you very much to our markets reporter in New York, Jill Malandrino, for that update.
Thanks very much, Michael.
Germany is tightening its migration laws in response to the huge numbers of refugees arriving on its borders. Henry Ridgewell reports from Schwäbisch Gmünd in southern Germany, where tension is growing over rival visions for the future of migration into the town.
Across Germany, former military barracks, relics of the country's recent history, are being converted to cope with its 21st century crisis. One compound outside the town of Schwäbisch Gmünd near Stuttgart houses 200 asylum seekers from 25 different countries. In the communal kitchen, Gambor and his friends are cooking a lunch of local sausage and cabbage. Gambor is from Bosnia, recently designated as a safe country by the German government, meaning it's less likely he'll gain asylum.
Das ist deine Land, für mich keine Land. Gib keine Land. Das ist meine Land, aber für mich keine Land.
Gambor says it is not safe in Bosnia. It is not safe for my family. It is not safe for my children. His friend Amir is from Kosovo, another country recently designated as safe. My brother is dead, my father is dead, both were killed, he says. I escaped Kosovo with my children, with my wife. If we were still in Kosovo, we would be killed. Local authorities do not discriminate against any nationality. The refugees' fate is decided in asylum tribunals. New refugee housing is being built nearby, designed to house 160 refugees. But the site was attacked by arsonists in December, putting the project back by several months. The local mayor, Richard Arnold, says Germany is dealing with the migrant crisis on its own, and other European countries must share the burden.
What we need definitely is a consistent immigration policy, which we do not have at the moment as Deutschland, as Germany. And it also needs, of course, a discussion over the item of the frontiers, the European frontiers. At the moment, what we realize is that Europe falls apart.
Europe is hardening its stance. Germany is tightening asylum laws. The EU is developing a beefed-up border force. But Schwäbisch Gmünd's regional lawmaker Klaus Pavel, a member of German Chancellor Angela Merkel's Christian Democrats party, says Europe has a moral duty to help.
Wir sollten bereit sein, alle auf der Welt, die in der
Lage. He says that all of us in the world who are able to should be prepared to help, to take in people who are in need. In Schwäbisch Gmünd, local authorities insist the best response to concerns over migration is to integrate the refugees as quickly as possible and prove that they can be an asset to German society. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Schwäbisch Gmünd in southern Germany.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Canadian researchers have found that nonverbal human sounds of emotion, such as a scream of anger or alarm, a cry of sadness, or a laugh of joy, are able to better communicate feelings than spoken words. Writing in a study published by the journal Biological Psychology, the scientists from Montreal's McGill University also discovered that our brains respond in just 0.1 seconds to these non-spoken vocalizations. They say our ability to quickly recognize the non-spoken sounds of emotion was a matter of human survival long before language was developed. Working with 24 research subjects, the scientists found that sounds of happiness, like laughter, registered quicker with the volunteers than sounds of sadness or anger. But angry sounds and speech produced longer-lasting brain activity in their subjects' brains than either happiness or sadness. I am VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Thank you. You're listening to International Edition. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is in Laos, the current chair of the 10-Nation Association of Southeast Asian Nations. It's part of a regional tour by Kerry aimed at preparing for an ASEAN meeting hosted by President Obama in California next month. Malcolm Cook is an analyst with the Singapore-based Institute of Southeast Asian Studies. VOA's Victor Beatty asked Cook if ASEAN is capable of showing a united front, given some of the member states' close ties with China.
I don't think so. It hasn't in the past, apart from some relatively low common denominator discussions. And Laos is very close to China economically, and as you mentioned, is landlocked, so has no bilateral interest in the South China Sea. So I think as in 2012 when Cambodia was ASEAN chair, Laos would prefer to limit discussions of the South China Sea during its year of hosting ASEAN.
But there are members of ASEAN who are very concerned about activities in the South China Sea.
Oh, certainly. And the Philippines has taken China to the International Arbitration Tribunal, and the ruling should come closely. Singapore recently permitted U.S. surveillance flights out of Singapore. So the South China Sea issue, the importance of it and how to deal with China in relation to it, divides the 10 countries of ASEAN more than it unites them.
What do you think, aside from China, the topic of discussion will be at this special ASEAN meeting in California?
One will be, from an ASEAN point of view, U.S. commitment to ASEAN centrality, the central role that ASEAN plays in Asia-Pacific regional organizations, and also probably greater U.S. support for ASEAN projects. That won't make the headlines, but that'll be a key interest, particularly of the poorer ASEAN member states like Laos and Cambodia. So South China Sea will be the headline, but there'll be lots of other smaller, more development-oriented interests from ASEAN, I think.
Mr. Kerry will also visit Phnom Penh, and he may speak out on human rights.
Secretary of State Kerry will also meet some of the opposition leaders who are under more pressure at the moment in Cambodia. There's a election coming up in 2 years, so talking out about human rights and criticizing, even indirectly, the Hun Sen regime wouldn't be very well received, but probably justified, particularly from an American Secretary of State.
He's rounding out his trip with a stop in Beijing. There, the speculation is that he will press China to put more curbs on North Korea following its fourth nuclear test. And how successful might he be?
Probably not very successful. I'm sure there'll be joint statements or of the frustration that both feel towards North Korea and, you know, and a push for North Korea to live up to its commitments. But China is North Korea's most important economic partner by far, and they are an ally of China as well. So China so far has been hesitant to put too much pressure on North Korea.
Now for some entertainment. Here is Steve Norman with a look at three new stars in the music scene who could make it big in 2016.
Born and raised in the U.S. city of Phoenix, Arizona, and now singer-songwriter Casey Hill is making music on Conway West's Good Music label. Casey Hill worked as a model and then a dancer for one of Kanye West's tours before recording music as an alternative rhythm and blues artist with such hits as Arm's Length. Born in the British county of West Sussex, singer-songwriter Tom O'Dell always knew he wanted to do what his idols did. Big into Elton John, Leonard Cohen, and Bob Dylan, O'Dell's songs have been described as emotional and raw.
I wanna take you somewhere, so you know I care. But it's so cold and I don't know where. I brought you daffodils on a pretty string, but they won't flower like they did last spring. And I wanna kiss you, make you feel alright. I'm just so tired to share my nights. I wanna cry and I wanna love, but all my tears have been used up on another love, all my tears been used up on another love, all my tears have been used up on another love, all my tears have been used up.
And then there's Dua Lipa. Born in Kosovo, now living in London, her singer-songwriter skills have pushed her to the top of the downloads charts with such hits as Be the One.
I see the moon, oh, when you're looking at the sun. Not a fool, no, you're not fooling anyone.
Dua Lipa sings what's known as Cosmo Pop, somewhere between pure pop and R&B.
Come back to me, baby, we can work this out. Oh, baby, come on, let me get to know you. Just another chance so that I can show that I won't let you down and run. No, I won't let you down and run.
Casey Hill, Tom O'Dell, and Dua Lipa are on just about every music critic's watch list to become big stars. And 2016 just might be the year that happens.
Thank you to Steve Norman. You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. The director today was Peter Heinlein. The engineer was Al Santos. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. Have a great week.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Entering its last year in office, the Obama administration has made it clear that engagement with Asia continues to be a top priority, with an agenda that includes economic, security, and political cooperation with Asian partners. In 2016, the United States will push for approval of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a trade agreement between 12 Pacific Rim countries. The United States will also continue to modernize its alliances and to deepen security relationships with emerging partners. In the Asia-Pacific region, the United States is ready to support its allies in building maritime security, humanitarian disaster relief, and counter-piracy capacity. Maritime security and territorial issues will be clearly on the agenda this year as well, said Deputy National Security Advisor for Strategic Communications Ben Rhodes during a recent speech at the Washington Foreign Press Center. The United States is committed to upholding freedom of navigation, he said. On issues like the South China Sea disputes, we'd like to encourage all parties to de-escalate tensions and resolve their issues through international law. The United States will also continue to cooperate with China on issues of common interest. So, for example, last year, one of the biggest issues that we focused on domestically and internationally was climate change, said Mr. Rhodes.
We would not have achieved the Paris Agreement without the cooperation that the United States and China had on that issue, both in terms of the announcement made in Beijing during his last trip and the subsequent cooperation leading into Paris.
We are going to work very closely with China on a whole range of issues related to the Asia-Pacific, said Mr. Rhodes. For example, we'll be working with China through the UN Security Council and also in our own bilateral discussions about how to demonstrate to North Korea that its recent nuclear test and the threat it poses to our allies and to the world will lead to greater costs, consequences, and isolation.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.